On this fourth day of July 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we begin with a review of chapter 2. Sanjaya Vacha Tantata Kripaya Vishtam Ashupurna Kulekshanam Vishidantam Idam Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudanah Sanjaya Uvacha Tam Tata Kapaya Vishtam Ashupurna Kulekshanam Vishidantam Idam Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudanah. Translation: Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. So this chapter begins with Krishna trying to encourage Arjuna to fight. Arjuna, in the previous chapter, he had all these arguments why he shouldn't fight. He didn't want to kill his relatives, his worshipable guru, Dronacharya, the grandfather, Bhishma, and all the others who were very beloved. And he came up with various arguments how this would cause great havoc in society, because the men would be killed, the women would be unprotected, and this would cause Varna Sankara, unwanted population, and it would be greatly sinful. So he ended up, at the end of the chapter, his mind was overwhelmed with grief. He cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down in the chariot. Now for a Kshatriya to cast aside his bow and arrows is a serious thing. Very serious. So Krishna begins his encouragement on the basis of Kshatriya Dharma. It's one Kshatriya speaking to another, or the charioteer, the chariot driver, trying to encourage the hero on the chariot. So therefore he says, O Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They're not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. Sonaprita, don't yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. So there's nothing inherently transcendental about these words. This is any Kshatriya speaking to another Kshatriya who's having hesitating to enter the battle might say these words. So then Arjuna has his few verses here where he kind of summarizes his reasons why he doesn't want to fight. Killer of Madhu, Krishna, how can I counterattack with arrows in battlemen like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? So these are the two main people on the other side, warriors on the other side, who he really didn't want to kill. He had great respect and love for them. So then he says, this is a classic, better let I go out and beg. Let me just live by begging, than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though they desire worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. So in other words, he doesn't see any possibility of enjoying the kingdom because they will have to be killed, and they are his worshipable guru and grandfather. So he sees no reason to fight. We don't even know which is better, whether we should be killed or they should conquer us and kill us. Then he speaks of the sons of Dhritarashtra, the same thing. They're also beloved, you know, compatriots, even though they tried to kill him. You can see the forgiving heart of a Vaishnav. We don't care to live if we had to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra. So then comes this key verse, text 7. You can turn to text 7. We can chant this one over responsibly. 2:7. Karpanya dosho pahataso bhava. Prichami tvam dharma sambuddha cheta. Yakche yaksyam nishtitam bruhitanme. Shishyaste hum shadi mam tvam papannam. Now I'm confused about my duty and I've lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And so now the whole relationship changes. Arjuna is no longer speaking to Krishna as a friend, but rather as a disciple. It's a very different relationship. And this word, nishchitam, that he has faith that Krishna can tell him for certain what the right thing is. Otherwise, he shouldn't accept him as a guru. So that's a very important point. How he can bring about his ultimate good, the Shreya. And I am your disciple. Please instruct me, surrender to you. And then one last verse, he says, basically, I find no means to drive away my grief, as drying my senses. I won't be able to spell it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth, with sovereignty like that of the demigods in heaven. So the kingdom in and of itself doesn't appeal to Arjuna. If he's to fight, he's going to fight for higher reasons. And then Sanjay quotes Krishna, Arjuna, these famous words, in Govinda, I shall not fight. And then comes the beginning of Krishna's transcendental instructions. So beginning in text 11, this chapter is divided into sections. So this is kind of an introductory section of 10 verses here that recalls the previous chapter. Kind of summarizes the reasons. Then Arjuna's surrender. And now Krishna begins his instruction in text 11, and for 20 verses he will give a primer, if you will, on the soul. So these between 11 and 30, this is what we hear about, basically the nature of the soul in contrast with the body. So the first thing he does is chastises him. He says, you're speaking learned words, seeming to be speaking learned words, but you don't know what you're talking about. You're mourning for what is not worthy of grief, namely the physical body. When he's talking about killing Drona and Bhishma and the others, he's afraid that their bodies will be killed and I won't see them anymore. I won't be able to relate to them anymore. So those who are wise, don't meant for the dead or the living. Then this very important verse, which is in this purport, it's employed in that way, and Prabhupada often used it to combat the Mayavadis. Natvevaham jatanasam. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. This is text 12. The idea is that we have been individuals in the past, forever. When Krishna says that we're eternal, which is a basic theme here, it means that we're eternally spirit souls, and we will eternally be spirit souls. So Krishna is saying, I also existed individually in the past, I exist now, and I'll exist forever in the future. So this is a direct contradiction with the Mayavadis who try to posit that we will merge, that some souls, if they achieve liberation, they merge with the Supreme, and they no longer exist individually. That individuality is an illusion. But Krishna is directly contradicting this. And if you read that purport, you'll see there's a lot of arguments on that score. So this is a great anti-Mayavadi verse. Then this famous verse 13, the basic principle of transmigration. Very nice analogy. Krishna compares, we're even transmigrating as we live in this one body. We've had so many bodies in the past. Baby body, childhood body, young man or woman body, adolescent body, going on and on. They're all different bodies, but because it's slowly changing, you're not aware of it. But it's certainly true if you think about it. So just as we're the same person, I'm the same person I was when I was 8 years old. I feel the same. Body may have changed, but I'm the same person. So what's the same about me? Body's changed, the mind has changed, emotions have changed. It's me, the soul. I'm not the body, therefore I'm not the body. That's the conclusion. And one who understands this is not bewildered at the time of death. As he says in a few verses later, it's like taking off an old coat for the dearer, for the self-realized. But still, 14, we have to tolerate. In order to become dearer, we have to learn to tolerate the dualities, heat and cold, pleasure and pain. They arise from the touch of the skin, the senses with the sense objects. They come and they go. And one has to tolerate. And if you can, then you become eligible for liberation. That's text 15. You can tolerate these dualities. If you can't tolerate, if your mind is always being, you know, in anxiety or unstable by these dualities, then there's no question of liberation. That's what the 15 is about. So Arjuna was anything but Dira at the start here. He's very upset by the prospect and he's lost his composure. He's not Dira. He's not calm. Then, what's the real and the unreal? Text 16. That which is permanent is real. That which is impermanent is unreal, in this definition. So, na asato vidite bhavo. There is no existence or endurance enduring existence. For the asat, of the non-existent, there is no endurance, you know. And for the there's no changing quality for that which is sat. So in this verse, the real is equated with that which is permanent. That's the sat. We are all sat. We are all existent, eternally existent, and everything around us is asat. But when we identify with the asat, we think that we're changing. We're being born, we're dying, we're undergoing all these things, when actually the soul is just watching it all. But we've forgotten that, and therefore the first step is to realize we're the observer, we're separate. Okay. And then comes more verses describing the soul. Avinashi, you cannot destroy it. There's some repetition, you can never destroy the soul. It's pervading the whole body. You know, that's what the soul is, conscious and consciousness. You know, it's a unit of consciousness that emanates the energy of consciousness throughout this body and animates it. Avyayasya, this word avyaya is the most used word in the Bhagavad Gita. And keep running into it all the time. Krishna describing himself, the super soul, or the individual soul. Avyaya means imperishable, inexhaustible, never decreasing. The word vyadi, meaning disease, comes from this, not avyaya. Avyaya means not, but vyadi means, you know, that which degenerates, disintegrates the body, is disease. So no one can destroy the soul. Antavanti hime deha nitya sokta shirin. I put this into a little poem. Everybody dies, nobody dies. Wake up and open your eyes. You're not that body, you're pure spirit soul. Chant the holy name and attain life's goal. It's based on this verse, inspired by this verse. The first line, antavanti hime deha. All these bodies are ending, they're endable. They come to an end. Nitya sokta shirin, but the soul, that which was in the body, sharirina, is said to be eternal. So that's the basic principle. And also now, immeasurable. 1/10,000 part the tip of a hair, atomic. It cannot be destroyed. Therefore, fight. So the whole idea is to bring him to fight. You can't, nobody's dying here, ultimately. They're just changing their dress. So that's the first idea that the Christian is hammering home now. And no, therefore, one who thinks that the living entity is the slayer or thinks he is slain is not in knowledge. For the self slays not nor is slain. The self is not doing it. The body is doing it. You know. And certainly the self is not slain. And then this key verse, text 20. In this 20 verse lesson on the soul, this is probably the key verse that's most quoted. There's other important ones. Najaya, let's chant it together. Najayate mriyate vakadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita vanabhuyaha. Ajo nitya kshasvato yam purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. So, this verse also refers to the six changes. That everything created, whether it's a body, a building, or a planet, undergoes as it comes into being, develops, grows, is sustained for some time, produces some byproducts, dwindles, and ultimately destroyed. The six changes. So those are specifically refuted in this verse for the soul. He has none of those six changes. So it's worth memorizing this verse if you're into that. Prabhupada quoted it all the time. Nahanyate hanyamane shirire. The soul is not slain when the body is slain. And one who knows this, text 21, yayinam ajam avyayam, knows that the soul is unborn, and avyayam, there's that word again, avyayam, inexhaustible. How can such a soul kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? And then another nice analogy Krishna gives us, taking and putting on of a coat. Very nice, you know. And actually Prabhupada expanded on this, that we have two coats. The coat and shirt, you call it. The coat and shirt. The coat is the external body, and the shirt is the subtle body. So when you die, you just take the coat off. The shirt stays with you. In other words, the subtle body stays with you until you really get liberation, then you take them both off. And what's underneath? Your spiritual body. Until then, we're identifying with the shirt and coat, or with the subtle and gross body. Very nice analogy. So it's just like, you know, you take off old coat and put a new one on, take off old bodies, put a new one on. And then some qualities of the soul, the two verses, they kind of overlap. The soul can never be cut to pieces, can never be burned by fire, moistened by water, withered by the wind. He repeats that idea in the first line of text 24. And then again, he's eternal. Then now here's another one, sarvagata. Now sarvagata means going everywhere. Now it's not that we are all pervading, but it's that souls are everywhere. There's souls on the sun. There's a whole world there. The scientists don't recognize it. It's just inanimate. No. You know, just as we expand, our predominant body is made out of water and earth. You know, there can be bodies made out of other things, like more, you know, much more sun or much more fire than earth. And each body has all the elements. We have air, we have fire, we have water, but the proportions are different. So you have bodies that are mostly fire and just a little bit of water and earth like that. So they go everywhere. Sarvagata, stana, they cannot be moved. Achaloyam, sanatana, eternal again. Invisible, 25. Avyakta means invisible. Inconceivable. Certainly all this is inconceivable to the scientists who only deal with the things that they can measure with their senses. Doesn't undergo any change. Avikariyam. Knowing this well, Arjuna, you should not lament. You know, he's bringing it home to the idea that the whole problem is Arjuna's lamenting. Ashochan of Ashochistra. So don't lament for this change of dress of the eternal soul. And then he gives arguments. Maybe the soul comes into being and goes down. But still you should not lament. What's the... And then a very important verse. Jata sahiduva mrityura. That for everything that's born, death is certain. But for everyone who dies, birth is certain. And therefore, for the unavoidable, do not discharge your duty and don't lament for that which is unavoidable. They're going to die anyway, sooner or later. You know? So, you know, this is a... But there's a mission. If they die on this battlefield and Yudhishthira becomes king, then so much good can be done. Krishna is directly contradicting Arjuna's argument. He was thinking that if they die, then the bad will be done. And the earth will become disorganized. But no, it's Krishna's plan that Yudhishthira be reinstated and that he rule under Dharma. And that's what Arjuna is repeating now by not fighting. So, you know, in the purport here to text 28, you're unmanifest. At a certain point we didn't exist, now we exist, and eventually we won't exist. So why lament the loss of a certain amount of chemicals? Prabhupada talks about in the purport here. And then 29, the amazing quality of the soul. Even though, as devotees, this is our bread and butter, so to speak, and as we hear about it every day, we think about it every day, for most people it's completely amazing to hear about the soul. Because is invisible, immeasurable, inconceivable. So that's what this 29th verse is all about. And then the final verse in this section, summing up, Dehi Nityam Abhadyoyam, Dehi Sarvasabharata, Tasmat Sarvani Bhutani Nityam Shoti Namarasi. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore you should not grieve for any living being. So this is the basic 20 verses on the soul. Then Krishna goes back and he's speaking again about Swadharma, Arjuna's Kshatriya Dharma. So there's a few verses about that. Now considering your duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there's no better engagement than this, than such a battle. In other words, this is a battle in which you're undoubtedly on the side of the good and you shouldn't hesitate. Real Kshatriyas are very happy to get such a battle. You know, Yodhuchayacho arises of its own accord. They're very happy, Sukhina Kshatriya, to get it. But if you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will incur sin. Exactly what Arjuna was trying to avoid by not fighting, he will incur by not fighting. This is the whole point here. Directly countering his argument. You'll be sinful for neglecting your duty and lose your reputation. Then this whole thing of the reputation. For a Kshatriya, you know, that's so important to be thought of as a powerful. So now he's saying, people will always speak of your infamy. And for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. So if someone is a no account, yeah, people can insult them, and, you know, it's just piling on. But for someone who has been very respected, suddenly to be defamed is extremely painful. And that's what he's saying here. But you're certainly respectable now, but if you leave the battlefield, your name will be mud. And then who will speak ill of you? All those who respect you, your peers, the great generals who have highly esteemed you, will think you've left the battlefield out of fear rather than out of compassion for those others who you would have killed, and they will consider you insignificant. So he's cutting to the quick. You know, the Kshatriya heart is very sensitive to this. Your enemies will describe you. What could be more in painful words? What could be more painful for you? So then, the general principle of Kshatriya: either you'll be killed on the battlefield and go to heaven and enjoy there, you know, because it's a righteous fight, or you'll conquer and you'll enjoy the kingdom here. So it's a win-win situation. You can't lose by fighting. That's what text 37 is all about. And then he kind of starts to segue into this more transcendental teachings, which will go on. Fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. So this is rising above the dualities, and this will be explained later in the chapter and later in the Bhagavad Gita. And in this way, you won't incur sin. So we can take this. You know, we should simply do our duty for the sake of doing it for Krishna, and not worry about the result. You know, then we'll be nicely situated. That's the whole idea. Then 39 starts a different section. Thus far I've described knowledge through analytical study. Now listen as I explain the terms working without food of results. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondages of work. So now we begin this buddhi yoga section here. Prabhupada talks about buddhi yoga a lot in the purport here. And this is echoed, of course, in the 10th chapter, text 10. Tesam satad yuktanam pratitam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam. For those who are serving me with love, I give the intelligence by which they can connect with me in yoga and progress. Okay, now we come to some really important verses. Text 40. If you just try a little bit in this process, even a little of the advancement will protect you from the greatest danger, which is to lose the human form of life. So you're assured of that, if nothing else. And there's no loss. In material life, there's always loss. Eventually, everything is lost. Krishna takes it all away. You start a new chapter. You don't take anything from the previous life except some karma, you know. But none of the things that you work so hard to build up. But here, if you do just a little bit, you take that into your next life. It's permanent asset. That's the whole idea. It's a qualitatively different value here. Neha na iha abhikrama nasho. There's no destruction and no pratyavaya, no diminution either. Just a little advancement protects one from the greatest danger. And then a really key verse, vyavasayatma kaput here, one has to be one-pointed in one's intelligence and firmly determined. Otherwise, the mind goes in so many branches. Text 41. So Prabhupada, he took this verse in the purport here. He describes how this means to be fixed on the order of the guru and to come, you know, whether life or death, to try to follow that order. And Prabhupada did that himself. He quoted here this key verse, Yasya Prasada. By the mercy of the guru, one gets the mercy of Krishna. Otherwise, there's no possibility of advancement. Now Krishna is talking about in 42 and 43. Please take care. The flowery words of the Vedas. Arjuna was arguing on the basis of this section of the Vedas called the Karma Kanda section. Oh no, the men will be killed. They won't be able to offer pinda for the forefathers and so forth. But here Krishna is saying that these flowery words of the Vedas, which induce one to sacrifice to go to heaven, ultimately misguide one. And this phrase Vedavararata comes in. The so-called practitioners or knowers of the Vedas. The second line of verse 42. Vedavararata aparta nanyarast. They say there's nothing more than this. This is the essence of the Vedas. Sacrifice, go to heaven, all of these things. But their goal is kamatma. They're self-centered. It's material desires. And what do they want? Janma, good karma, good birth, karma. Good karma, pala pradam, the fruits of good karma, going to heaven. Perform, you know, extraordinarily expensive and elaborate sacrifices. And their goal is bhoga and aishwarya, material enjoyment and wealth that will buy the material enjoyment. So, then in text 44, puts that idea down. That one should not be bewildered by bhoga and aishwarya. Bhoga aishwarya, let's chant it together, I'll say, you see? Bhoga aishwarya prasaktanam, prasaktanam, taya paritachetasam. Vyavasayatmaka buddhi. Samadhaun habhidhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So if we're having trouble being resolved, it's because we're probably too attached to these two things, bhoga and aishwarya. So Krishna will now help us describe to us a means by which we can reduce the fever of bhoga and aishwarya. So then he says in 45 that for the most part, the Vedas deal with the three modes of nature. The subject matter, vishaya, is on the three modes of nature. But you should be above those modes, Arjun. Nistra gunyo bhavarjuna. Be beyond the dualities, be situated in the mode of goodness or pure goodness, and don't worry about your yoga and kshema, about your necessities and your welfare, gain and safety. I'll take care of it. He promises later. You know, just keep thinking of me, devoted to me, I will provide everything for you. So this is a key verse here. And then you'll really be understanding the goal of the Vedas. Just like if you have a big reservoir of water, then you don't have to worry about drinking water, bathing water, washing water. It's all taken care of. So similarly, if you understand the goal of the Vedas, which is Krishna, then everything else is taken care of. You don't have to worry, am I going to heaven or not? Am I getting rid of my sin? You know, what about this, what about that? One who's really surrendered to Krishna, Krishna provides. That's part of what the surrendering process, being confident he will protect and confident he will maintain. So that's what this verse is all about. If you just know the goal of the Vedas, then all the preliminary or subsidiary purposes will be served. So now Arjun is going to be encouraged to follow his duty, but not to covet the fruits of the action. He's being encouraged to fight for the sake of duty, ultimately for the sake of Krishna, not for the sake of the kingdom. Kingdom is there or not. So Arjuna doesn't have to worry about that. He's fighting simply because Krishna wants him to, and it's his duty to fight. So you're not entitled to the fruits. You have a right to perform the action, not entitled to the fruits, and you shouldn't consider yourself the cause of the results of the action. Now, I always remarked on this verse because these are like all the material reasons why people do something. They're all covered here. Yes, you have a right I want to have a job, but I also want to enjoy the fruits. And I want to be known as a good worker, you know, as whatever my field is. In other words, I'm doing a good job. I should be recognized, get a bonus, get a, you know, like exactly the opposite of what Krishna says. And so if someone has to do his duty, he can't enjoy the fruits, and he can't get any fame for it, then the tendency is to not do it. So the heck with that, I want to work. He says, no, mate sangos to karmani. Don't be attached to not doing your duty either. These are all the reasons why people work, for the fruits, the money, and for the fame. The Christians cut those two out. If you're not known as the doer of the work, where's the fame? You know, what to speak of the fruits. But don't also, you know, slack off. I mean, this is exactly where we're at in an ashram. If we're not fully Krishna conscious, which is likely the case most of the time, then, you know, the engine for like doing our duty may get a little bit run down. Well, I can't enjoy the fruits, and I can't, you know, there's no fame. I have to be very humble about it. I'm not the doer. All right, let me take a nap. Right? I mean, it happens all the time. But really, you have to fight that tendency. No, we want to do it for Krishna. That's the only reason. No, I always like this verse. So then Krishna talks about yoga stuck guru kama, sangam tukta. So do your duty, but don't be attached. Sangam tukta. Give up the attachment to success or failure. Be equipoised. And this is a theme that goes throughout now. Be equipoised in happiness and trust, success and failure. Cast far away all abominable activity. And here's the word Buddha Yoga again. Be situated in Buddha Yoga. This is Bhakti Yoga with an emphasis on the intelligence. Right? Use your intelligence to understand. Surrender fully unto this this consciousness. Don't be a miser. You know, misers just want to enjoy the fruit. They work for the fruit. Okay, again, Buddha Yukta, Buddha Yoga, more Buddha Yoga. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of good and bad reactions. So the idea is that we carry forward into every lifetime our karmic record, right? So how to eradicate that? Right? Even the good karma is no good, because that means you have to come back in this material world. So we want nice karma, no karma at all. Get rid of all the bad and good karma from before, and don't incur any more good or bad karma. That's the trick. That's the art of work. So the way to do that is through yoga, doing it for Krishna. He eradicates the bad and good karma, and by working for him, you don't incur any more karma. This is the only way to remain free from the bonds of karma. And this is the art of working in this world. You have to work, but work in such a way that you don't get entangled with the fruits, or there's no good or bad karma. Now, karma jam buddhi, those who are linked to Krishna in buddhi yoga, they give up, minishina, intelligent, they give up the fruits of their work as far as possible for the service of the Lord. And this way they remain free of the bondage of birth and death, and they go to the world beyond all misery. And then he talks about the intelligence going past the dense forest of delusion. You should become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So this idea of no longer being allured by promises of some heavenly planet or some good birth and so forth, that can only come when one is satisfied within, fully satisfied in Krishna consciousness. That's what it really means to be beyond the dense forest of delusion. Otherwise, the dualities take hold of our consciousness, and we're always trying to maximize the good and minimize the pain, and our mind is absorbed in material things. So, that's important there. Nice verse from Madhavendra Puri describing that state, being indifferent. Again, he goes back to the flowery words of the Vedas. Your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery words of the Vedas. The promises of good birth, aristocracy, heaven, remains fixed in the trance of civilization. You will have attained divine consciousness. So that kind of ends another section. Now Arjun will ask, what is the symptom of one who has attained this steady consciousness? This stitta pragya. You know? And there's some very nice verses now coming up in that regard. And then Krishna will describe how we can attain that state. It's all very logical. So Arjuna wants to know the symptoms or characteristics. What are the symptoms of those whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? So then we get some nice verses, beginning 55. Here are the symptoms. Prajahati yadā kāman sarvam parta manogatam. So the desires all come up from the mind. Right? The mind is producing all of these desires in cooperation with the senses. They have to be cast aside vehemently. Prajahati. Really give them up strongly. How is it possible? By remaining satisfied in the self. By the self contacting Krishna constantly, you remain satisfied. And the kama, they don't take root, as Krishna will describe later, like the ocean where the rivers are coming in, but it remains undisturbed. You see? So that's how Atmanirbhavanatushta Stitta Pragya Stodochade. This Stitta Pragya is the theme here. It's kind of a chorus line here. Stitta D, Stitta Pragya. Then he goes on with the theme. Dukeshur Anubhignamana. So this means that the mind is not disturbed by misery, by threatened misery. Dukeshur Anubhignamana. And also is not allured by prospects of happiness, material happiness. Sukeshu Bhagatasva. And then here's the first use of this phrase, which comes up quite a bit in Bhagavad Gita, 3 or 4 or 5 times. Vita, raga, bhaya, krodha. Giving up these three. Raga, bhaya, krodha. They go together. Raga is more or less like kama, material desire. As soon as a material desire is there, there must be anger, because eventually you get frustrated. And when you can't express your anger, or you're confronting a superior force, there's fear. So these things go together. If you don't have the raga, then there's no question of anger, because you're completely self-satisfied. And then the fear also dissipates, because you transcend even the bodily concept of life. Real devotees, they transcend that fear. So he's encouraging, Vita raga bhaya krodha, then you come astita dhyamuni. Again, the same idea, very calm. In that state, one can progress in devotional life, in any yoga process. Yaksarvatra anabhisnehas, not too much affection for anything, anywhere. That's what this is all about. Yaksarvatra anabhisneha. And then, prapya, shubha shubham. So if you attain shubha, You're not overwhelmed with praise and jubilation. And when you attain ashubha, which means that which is painful or evil, you're not freaked out, dveshti. You don't become hateful and angry and bear a grudge and all this business. That pragya patishtita, you see. Those are the dualities. Within the dualities, you remain calm. That's what all this is about. Then he compares to the kurma. Kurma is a tortoise or a turtle. The turtle, when it doesn't need to use the senses, draws him inside. So when the senses are not, cannot be used for Krishna service, then they should remain inactive. You know? That's the idea. And then really key verse 59, Vishyabhani Vartante, that one may turn away from the sense objects. One may not consume them. Ahara means to eat. So each sense has its own sense object that it eats, kind of consumes. So you may not do that, but if you're just doing it artificially, desire will be still be there. You can't repress the desire, and it will come out. But if you get the higher taste, param drishtva navart, you see or experience the param, which in this case is Krishna, of course, you don't go back. Then you can remain fixed in renunciation. That's a key verse there. And then he goes, you know, but it's not so easy. Yatato yopikant, even when striving, even if it's vipashtita, he may be very wise, but indriyani pramateri hananti patabangvana, these senses, if you let them out of control, they're very powerful, and they'll take away the mana, the mind of anyone. So you have to control the senses. That's the next verse. Therefore, tani sarvani sang, all of them, samyamya, completely controlled and linked in yoga to me, asita. There's that word asita. Krishna wanted, Arjuna wanted to know, how does he sit? This is how he sits. He sits with senses controlled. And here's matpara. Matpara here, this is the first time Krishna mentions himself as the object of yoga, that I should be supreme. So this is key. If the senses are all engaged in yoga with Krishna as the ultimate goal in linking through service, then one can remain free from attachment to the external sense objects and in a calm state, equipoised amid the dualities. Vashe, under control. Yasyant, then he tested pragya patishtita. Not so easy. 62 and 63, the way to degradation. The ayat over Shyam Pungsa. The verses go together. By meditating on the objects of the senses, one becomes attached to them. From attachment comes real strong attachment, kama. From kama, there must be anger. I'll explain why, because you're always frustrated eventually. And from anger comes sammoha, complete bewilderment, beginning of text 33. You see that? From that sammoha, you lose your memory, smriti vibhrama. And when the smriti brangsha, when your memory is lost, then your intelligence is lost and you fall down in the material world. Just imagine if, you know, I'm trying to imagine, if I woke up one day, I had no idea, you know, about Krishna consciousness, no verses, no nothing, I lost my memory. I'd be lost. What would I do? All I could do would just be to respond to the demands of the senses. You see? The memory is such an important thing. You know, from one day to another, we accumulate understanding, you know, of Krishna consciousness, and this guides our life. If you lose that, then you're at the mercy of the material energy. So that's what happens if you cultivate the object of the senses. It becomes covered, 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 and you're more or less living on the animal platform. And now, what I consider a really key verse, how to avoid this fate. Raga Dvesha Vimuktais 2. Vishayanandriyais Charan. Atma Vashe Vidhey Atma Prasadam Adigachati. How to attain the prasadam of the Lord, the grace of the Lord. Here's the formula. A person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control the senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So vidheya, this comes from the word, you know, vidhi, which means a regulation, a rule and a regulation. So if one is situated in that, the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga, he can control the atma. Now the atma means the soul, the super soul, the body, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, all those can be the word atma means. So controlling the self means that we allow the higher self to control the lower self. We put ourselves under the control of the super soul of Krishna, and then everything falls into place. This is called atmavasya. But in order to get to that point, we have to practice the vidhis. And then, even as the indriyas move amongst the object of the senses, vishayan indriyais charan, Because after all, we're not cloistered away. We're not in the forest or the cave somewhere. We're in the city here, 2 blocks from the beach. So we're going to be moving among these objects of the senses. But if we're fixed in our vidhi, in our regulation, then we can get some self-control and raga dvesha vimukta. We can be free of raga and dvesha. And practically we see, if we're strongly Krishna conscious, then nothing can deviate us. You know, if we're strongly Krishna conscious, that means that we're at the lotus feet of Krishna. He's giving us the strength to transcend the dualities of this world. So, and then what happens if you get the prasadam? All your misery is gone. Prasade sabaduka nimhanir asubha jayate. Something to be desired. Because one becomes joyful, prasanna chetasu yashu, and buddhi payavata. Again, the buddhi is fixed. Back to that theme. On the other hand, nasti buddhi, if your buddhi is not linked to Krishna, you're not practicing buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga, then bhavana, there's no bhavana. Let's see. Okay, you can't have any real buddhi if you're not linked up. Your buddhi is being contaminated by the lower modes. So here, buddhi means, as Prabhupada says, transcendental intelligence. If you're linked up, yukta means in yoga. So we're back to buddhi yoga again. But without that yoga, there's also no bhavana, which here is translated as fixed mind and happiness. Bhava, happiness. And if there's no fixed mind and happiness, there's no shanti. Remember, there's this very nice statement by Lord Chaitanya describing who can really be peaceful in this world. Only someone is peaceful who doesn't want anything. If you don't want anything material from this world, you can truly be peaceful. But if you want bhoga, if you want bhukti, material happiness, certainly you can't be peaceful because you're never going to have enough of it, and whatever you do have, it is threatened to be lost. Right? And even if you want mukti, that's still a personal desire, and you can never be sure of the quality of your mukti. Right? As it says right in the Bhagavatam. You may be liberated today, so to speak, but you haven't really situated yourself in the spiritual world, and eventually you come down to this world again. What to speak of the yogis? You know, they're always competing. The Naga Babas in Kumbh Mela, they're fighting with each other to see who's going to take the bath first. What happened? You practice all this yoga. You may be 700 years old, you know, but you're very proud of your yogic achievements. You know? And some other fellow, he's got only 7 of the 8 cities. I've got 8 of them. You know? It's still an ego thing. It's still, I am the great yogi like that. It's not peaceful. Only the devotee can be peaceful. But without that peace, ashanta sikuta, where is there any happiness? Ashanta sikuta sukha. So then in 667, he describes how even one of the senses you have to be careful of, because just like a strong wind can blow, take a boat, say it's in a big hurricane or something, can take it all the way out to sea. So similarly, one of the senses that the mind fixes on can drag that mind away from Krishna. You know, that's text 67. As a strong wind sweeps away a boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind can carry away intelligence. You have to, that's for all of them. Sarvasha. Tasman yasi mahabaho nigrihitani sarvasha. All of them. Indiyand indiyarte vyas. Senses from the sense of tasya pragapachita. The same theme. You know, this is fixed. So then the final 4 verses here. What is day for the devotee is night for the, you know. It's like they're partying all day here, you know. Finally at night they finally get, actually at 4 in the morning they get exhausted eventually. Just when we're getting up for Mangalarti. Perfect analogy. Yeah. It's just the opposite. That's what this verse is about. And then this nice verse about the ocean, that the heart of the mind of the self-realized soul is deep and profound like an ocean. Even if so many stimuli for enjoyment come in, so many allurements, calm, you know, like Haridas Thakur chanting Hare Krishna. Can't deviate. That's the site. And then the final 2 verses here, Vayaya Kamanyaksavan, Pumang Chatati Nispaha, Nimamodam Hankara, Shanti Madigachati. Again, the peace. A person who's given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. And Prabhupada makes it abundantly clear that that state is only possible in Krishna consciousness. And then you attain nirvana. That's what it says. Isha Brahmistiti Parta Nainam Prapya Vimuyati. Never bewildered. Stitvasyam and the Kalepi Brahma Nirmana Michati. That Brahma Nirvana comes up quite a few times in the fifth chapter, you'll see. This is the way of the spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one thus is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So that's the second chapter in a nutshell. Any comments, questions? Yes, Rudy. Go ahead.
Oh. Okay. Here in this chapter, and then I think it was text 35, and then also at the end in the 18th chapter, Krishna gives this argument that it will be a dishonor for Arjuna not to fight. But he says in the same chapter that you should be free from the desire for prestige.
Right. There's so many times. Manapamanyo. In other words, that's the quality of one who's transcended the nature, the modes of nature. Yes, that's why I said that Krishna kind of shifts gears, you know, throughout the Gita. You also notice in the Karma Yoga chapter, he's talking about deity worship. He said, otherwise you'll be a thief if you don't. You know, at the beginning, Brahma, he created all these sacrifices and all these gods so that you'll nourish the gods and the gods will nourish you and everything will be fine, you know. But then, you know, in the 7th chapter, 9th chapter, he condemns deity worship roundly. Right?
Demigod worship, you mean?
Deity worship.
Deity worship.
Not deity worship. Demigod worship. So how do you reconcile those two? So it's a similar thing with this, because he's shifting gears in a way, you know. And it may seem contradictory. But ultimately, you know, we understand that... you know, the final section of the 18th chamber sums everything up. That the most secret teaching, the essential teaching, is just to think of Krishna and become his devotee and like that, and you know, bow down to him and sacrifice. And then everything else is taken care of. But if it's a question of whether you're going to simply live a life of sense gratification, that's in the third chapter. It's a nice little phrase, half a verse. Those who live simply for indriya rama, indriya priti, they're sinful, agayur. And they live uselessly. They don't make any progress. Mogam partasajivati. You know? So that's one, you know, that's like a low platform. Instead of that, you know, worship the gods. In other words, recognize the higher authority. And then you won't be living sinfully, at least. You see what I'm saying? But then at a certain point, Krishna condemns that and says, no, don't worship the gods. That's still a manifestation of material desire, which ultimately is fruitless. Antavattu palamtesham. You see what I'm saying? He kind of brings us along. He brings you along gradually. So he's covering a lot of bases here. And one of the ones that he does cover also is just this idea of Arjuna, you should do your duty, you know, swadharma, as a kshatriya. And that's why you say he gives all of these kshatriya arguments. But then, you know, after a while he goes beyond that. So he's bringing us through different stages, the yoga ladder. And even one of them is, you know, basic, you know, just to be situated in varnashram and do your swadharma, you know. So you have to, you know, and Bhagavatam is like that also. There's so much about the duties in the different varnas. But then ultimately, it's Chaktavasva Dharma.
You know. Well, what does that particular argument have to do with duty? I mean, that's okay, but this seems just like a matter of being proud. You're urgent. This will be worse than death if they dishonor you. But what does it have to do with duty? You know, I mean to say, like, how is that uplifting? Like, even just doing something for the sake of your own prestige. That seems to be going the other direction. You know.
Well, that's why, you know, more or less, that's just a little interlude in the second chapter. And then, we're done with that, basically. You know. The idea here is that I think it's part of the... You know, I'd like to look a little more at the commentary and see how it fits in. Maybe, but my impression there, because I was also surprised at that. You know, after speaking about the soul and how it's completely separate from the body, and after all, Arjuna is not a kshatriya, you know, he's by, you know, eternally. You know, he's a friend of Krishna eternally, but the kshatriya business is something you do in the earth. Really, I mean, it's So why appeal to that? Why do we have that interlude at all? You know, that's, and I, you know, the only thing I ever came up with is that it's part of the plot, kind of. In other words, we don't immediately, you know, go into simply the like a scene with Purkit sitting with Sukadev, you know, where he's no longer a Kshatriya. He's just a renunciant. Boom, he did like that, you know. That's more absolute. It's more like, you know. But no, Arjuna is still, you know, the whole idea is a very tense situation. You're on a battlefield. And so part of that scene is this whole idea of the Kshatriya and how they feel about themselves and so forth. Ultimately, you know, before very long, I mean, those verses take what, like 2 minutes to chant or 1 minute to chant? It doesn't take very long to get through that. But it keeps us, reminds us that we're on the battlefield. I mean, that's all I can, I'd like to kind of read a little bit more about it, maybe consult Vishnu Chakravarti or Baladev and see what they say about those. Because it is an interesting point. Why would he appeal to more or less a bodily concept when he's talking about transcending the body? Yeah. So we'll put that into abeyance. Anyone else? Yes, Shruti.
I just wanted to add something to what you said. Just something like that. Probably it's because Arjuna himself was identifying himself with the body. As in, you know, I am Arjuna, Dhritarashtra is my, you know, uncle, and Duryodhana is my cousin. And, you know, so to take him from that platform to the platform where, you know, he has to take him step by step. If Krishna came to Arjuna directly and said, you're a soul, you're not a body, it might be too much for Arjuna to take. So he's taking him step by step to the platform where he's...
Well, that's what I said. And also I think the idea that from every angle of vision, even if you just identify as a Kshatriya, you know, this is the honorable thing to do. It's difficult, but it's the honorable thing to do.
So on his level, which is the most basic level, which is, you know, the body, the world, even in your level, this is the most...
Yeah, this is you're a great Kshatriya, and you won't... In other words, your plan is bankrupt. If you try to live, go off to the forest, you'll be plagued because first of all, it's not natural for you, and your reputation will be ruined, and that'll haunt you, you know, because that's who you are. So even on that level, you should fight. Okay, we have to end. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.